Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson had a busy 2021, in part doing something very near and dear to my heart. That's helping save the National Archives Seattle branch. He also wrapped up the year by testing positive for COVID. And Bob Ferguson, State Attorney General, joins us live now on the Cairo Radio Newsline. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Felix. Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Yeah, now, can we talk a moment about your COVID experience?
Sure.
How are you feeling? How bad did it get for you?
Thanks for asking, first of all. Everybody else in the family is doing great. They all got it, but they're all fine. To be honest, it hit me pretty hard. And frankly, I'm still even kind of just recovering from it, just physically and, a little bit of the headaches that I've still got. So it's been a real challenge. And I'm getting my booster tomorrow. And frankly, Felix, I wish I just made it more of a priority to take the time to get that booster earlier. It's going to be important to get for everybody.
Yeah, it's really important to do that. And my daughter had COVID about a year ago. She still has the parosmia, the long-term, effect of her smell and taste. And it is not any fun. I mean, it's not like it stops you from doing things, but it certainly makes it not very fun to experience regular daily stuff like eating or being around other people eating. It's really tough. So I hope
it's really true. I mean, when I first got it, I was flat on my back for 36 hours and I wasn't even moving. So it's been just a kind of a slow recovery since then. So the good news is during the holidays, the kids did not miss any school. They're walking out the door now for their first day after the break. So in the end, I think it'll all be okay.
Yeah. And we're hitting this, into the 2-year mark of this whole pandemic, and we have the infrastructure in place to work remotely and do things we need to do, even if we are recovering or still suffering symptoms. So anyway, here's to a continued recovery for you.
Thank you.
The reason
I
wanted to get you on was to look back. I mean, it's almost exactly 2 years ago where a listener reached out to me and said, hey, I saw this obscure federal report saying that this piece of property in Seattle with this big building on it's going to be up for sale. And I thought, what are they talking about? And it ended up being the National Archives over there by Sandpoint. And you were one of the first people I reached out to, your office, asking if you guys were involved in kind of seeing what was up with this, because the constituents, no one here in the Northwest had heard about this at all. It was kind of dropped on us by the federal government. So, I mean, the good news from last year is you were able to stop the sale. Correct?
Yes, we were. And I mean, to be candid, the federal bureaucracy at work here is just a bunch of bureaucrats back east that just drive everybody crazy about government that doesn't frankly care about what's going on locally around the country. And that was the situation here. They tried to sell this property without any public notice, no heads up to anybody. Thank God you stumbled on it. And we were able to file a lawsuit with a coalition of tribes and organizations. But we had to go to a federal judge to put a stop to it. That's what it took to actually stop the sale of this property.
Now, I've been reaching out quite a bit to the National Archives, the main office back in D.C., and I know they're really busy with all the January 6th stuff. They, as well as playing that role in maintaining, the ancient or the, 150-year-old history of places like the Northwest, they're also very actively dealing with the presidential records that are created and processing those things as one administration ends and another one begins. But they told me they still won't talk to me on the record because they said there's still litigation. There's still legal encumbrance or something that's stopping them from moving forward with talking to a guy like me at a radio station in Seattle about what seems like ancient history now. What's the status? Are you guys still involved in some kind of legal tangle with them about the National Archives?
There is, although that's no excuse for a public agency not to communicate about this issue. What's going on legally still, just to be clear, is we have ongoing what's called Freedom of Information request. This is basically a public records request to the federal government asking for documents related to the proposed sale of the property. And frankly, they've been stonewalling, turning over these documents for months and months and months. In fact, they've had to pay over $100,000 in costs and fees and penalties to us because of their delays. And they still haven't turned these records over. And so that's the only issue, is that there is litigation around that. Frankly, it's only going on still, Felix, because they simply refuse to turn those records over. I might also add, it's important for your listeners to know that while we stop the sale of the property, nothing legally prohibits these agencies from taking these records that mean so much to our community, the DNA of our region, as I think as you've called it, to take those records and move the records and leave the building there. And that's deeply concerning to us at this point.
So is there anything you can do is there some proactive steps? I mean, should we be working with lawmakers to come up with some different way to prevent this from happening again, or is it going to be just another legal battle if and when something bad happens?
No, this really is an issue for a federal delegation to put protections in the law to ensure that these records stay here. And look, if that building is not the right building, I can understand that. I'm no expert on buildings, but if they need a better building, great. but it's got the records need to stay here in Washington State. And just give you a sense of where these agencies are at. They want to resolve this ongoing litigation, this freedom of information lawsuit going on. They don't want to turn over the records. I said, great, we'll put a stop to the lawsuit, Felix, I told them, as, under one condition. You put in writing that you will not move the records out of Washington State. Guess what? They would not agree to it.
Oh, wow.
That gives you a sense of, yeah, that gives you a sense of where they are. Even now, after all this litigation, the terrible press they've had, angering tribes and other constituents here in Washington State, they won't put pen to paper and promise not to move the records. So I do think while the news was very good last year, what we did was we bought some time, but we do need our federal delegation, and your listeners should write to their federal delegation, their members of Congress, and encourage them to pass law that keeps the records here in Washington State.
I think I was always impressed by the tribal coalition that your office put together. I think it was every single indigenous tribe in the states affected, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and Alaska, signed on to this.
It was many of them, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, and different Native American groups sometimes disagree over things like fisheries or other stuff. This was something that pretty much everybody agreed on. And my hope was that powerful coalition could sort of take off on their own and do these next steps like you're talking about, apply the pressure they need to the lawmakers in the various states, because we had such great buy-in from all the different members of the House and the Senate, bipartisan, a rare moment of sunshiny bipartisanship in a very partisan era. So, Kim Wyman, before she left the Secretary of State's office here in Washington, she was working sort of behind the scenes to put together some kind of an effort to combine the efforts of the state archives along with the national archives. I think that's probably the momentum on that's probably gone with Secretary Wyman moving on to greener pastures. But it's interesting to hear you say that there's reluctance on the part of the National Archives to sign the kind of agreement you talked about. So maybe there's grassroots work to be done, sounds like.
Yeah, Felix, I mean, I don't like to be critical, but these federal bureaucrats have been nothing but a pain in the you-know-what to try to deal with. They simply will not work with us. They won't give us records we're entitled to. We have to litigate everything. As a result, they're paying fees and penalties and costs as a result of getting terrible press. So, but to give you a sense of how far out in left field they are, one of the records we got when they had to turn them over to us was the executive director of one of these agencies writing in the middle of all this, writing, no one really cares about the archives, except the Washington Attorney General, because his father-in-law was a historian. Well, first of all, it's my dad, not my father-in-law. He was no historian, amateur historian maybe, but he worked at Boeing for 40 years. But it gives you a sense of their attitude, that in private, they literally, the executive director is writing, nobody out there cares, when, to your point, it's exactly the opposite. So many people care, and they just don't get it. So frankly, it's hard to reach a resolution with someone when that's their attitude from 3,000 miles away.
All right. Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson, thanks for joining us live here on Kyra Radio, and good luck as you continue to recover from COVID.
Hey, Felix, thanks a lot. Happy New Year.
You too. Some of our state's new police accountability laws have some gaps. One local media outlet's coverage helped uncover them, and in some cases, that's led to some fresh changes. Kyra Radio's Hannah Scott has the story.
Most of us never heard of Brady lists until the spotlight landed on policing following the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police and the discussion around more than a dozen new police laws passed by the legislature last session. Some may still not know what they are. The lists are a way for prosecutors to track cops who have credibility issues, such as sustained findings of dishonesty or history of filing inaccurate reports or even a record of using excessive force. Prosecutors must share this information with defense attorneys because it could cast doubt on an officer's testimony in court. In early July of 2020, Crosscut's Melissa Santos decided it might make for an interesting story to look at such records across the state, given the increased attention on police accountability. So she requested Brady List records from the prosecutors of all 39 counties in the state. And Melissa, just you asking for these records actually uncovered a few issues.
What I found is the local prosecutors sometimes didn't realize they had gaps in their systems. And this matters because prosecutors are kind of on the line to share information that could, you know, hurt their case. They have a legal obligation to do that. But in some cases, one prosecutor in one office may not know that one of their key witnesses, a police officer, had some disciplinary finding against them or had some sort of issue where there was a question about whether they were being truthful. And then they can't meet their legal obligation, these prosecutors, to actually turn that information over to defense attorneys and people who are facing trial.
There were some pretty significant examples of gaps, right? For instance, in Douglas County, the county prosecutor was unaware that a local sheriff's deputy had in fact admitted to instances of tax evasion and insurance fraud on a polygraph in another county. In a central Washington county, a local police chief had no idea that one of his officers was even on a Brady list in another county. And in another county, the chief deputy prosecutor realized he had never seen a record of an excessive force incident involving a local cop, even though that information was held elsewhere in his office. Now, all of this matters because prosecutors are legally obligated to share those types of credibility issues that could basically impeach an officer's testimony. But in these cases, it just wasn't happening, and officers were slipping through the cracks. Many of the jurisdictions made changes after becoming aware of this due to that records request.
In some small counties, they sort of made sure they had a centralized system, saw that they had some sort of gap when they had to respond and give me records. They found new records they didn't know existed in their own offices sometimes about the police officers that may have some credibility issue. And in some cases, it's just a matter, there's a small enough county, they just kind of make sure it's centralized and they have clarified the procedures for how every prosecutor needs to check this information. And then in some other places, it actually caused them to say, oh, you know, I have this thing. Maybe this is something that I need to have this cop on a Brady list, even though they aren't on there now. So in a couple of cases, a prosecutor actually added someone to their own Brady list.
Now, the Brady lists are covered under existing law prior to all of the police accountability laws that passed last session, right? But the records request and your reporting on those problems also uncovered other issues with some of those new police accountability laws, specifically when it comes to ensuring that law enforcement agencies in the state are aware of these type of credibility issues before they hire a cop from another department in the state. That wasn't always happening, is what you found.
That's supposed to make it harder or impossible for these officers to move between departments when they have sufficient misconduct, you know, substantial misconduct. And, you know, later as I was reporting on another story related to these cops on these Brady lists, you know, I found there were 24 or so that did move between departments after being placed on the Brady list in one county or, you know, for one jurisdiction.
Now that uncovered other issues.
That when I was covering particularly that bill that the legislature passed this year that makes it easier to decertify a police officer, you know, take away their license to be a police officer. The sponsors of that bill really thought that it was able to apply retroactively. I remember them saying that when I was covering it as they were passing it. It came to my attention or became clear when I started asking that others don't agree that you can apply this law backward. Like, you know, people who have committed misconduct, you know, even a year ago, 6 months ago, prior to this law taking effect in July, may not be able to be held accountable for their actions, under this new system.
And once again, this is going to possibly lead to some changes, Melissa?
There's a disagreement that I think legislators may end up clarifying, you know, between them and the legal counsel that advises the Criminal Justice Training Commission, which is who does this decertification and certification process for police. They don't agree whether you can kind of apply this new bill backward or not. So that's something that the House Speaker did say she would like to see clarified. It remains to be seen whether they'll do that when they convene in the session that starts January 10th.
You're right. It does all sound really technical.
It all sounds kind of really technical, but it does mean that if you're a defense attorney representing someone, you're more likely in some of these counties to know that the, you know, cop or the police witness against your client, you know, has some sort of compromising information about that. I mean, that's something that resulted from this reporting. And I think there's a more thorough accounting in some of these counties of how many police officers should be on these lists.
The bottom line here is these are issues that can really impact people's lives, whether it's protecting someone's due process rights in a court case where a cop with credibility issues is allowed to provide witness testimony despite having a record of being dishonest, or an officer being able to move to another department despite a history of excessive force or other misconduct, or clarifications needed in new laws that truly impact officers' livelihood. What's the big picture here, Melissa?
You can't just take people's word for stuff sometimes, right?
Now that it's 2022, all the financial problems that existed on Friday are gone, right? We wipe the slate clean. Let's find out by asking CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
I want to say one thing about 2021. I feel like 2021 is getting a very bad rap in the eyes of Americans about the economy, especially. You know, the economy really did come roaring back in 2021. We'll see that growth probably, I don't know, when all is said and done, 5.5 or 6% growth, pretty amazing after seeing that cratering in 2020. The markets, stock markets, certainly came back. The S&P 500 rose just under 27%. That's huge. And most people were able to get through this terrible period called COVID these last couple of years and come out of that period in pretty decent financial shape. Not everybody, but the vast majority of Americans. So to put that frame around it, I just want to be clear, as much as you hate rising prices and inflation is going to get a lot of headlines, we'll talk about that, but really, the economy did quite well last year.
Yet it still seems like people like to talk about these sort of nagging concerns about inflation or about, you know, what's the recovery really going to look like, given that we're in another wave of COVID with Omicron right now. Any sense of like what's next on the horizon?
Well, I think that the what's next is that inflation continues to be an issue. There's no doubt about it. Right. And I think that, you know, when you pour money into an economy like we did and like many countries did in the developing nations and developing economies, what we know is that we poured that money in to help people survive. But part of the issue with all that money going in was that people started to spend it, and there were real issues around the supply chain of, you know, certainly that containers stuck in wrong places and manufacturing facilities broken down a little bit, and that caused inflation. And so as a result, when you look at the higher prices that you're facing right now, I think that what we're likely to see is that the rate of those increases is going to start to come down. I think that certainly by the summer, maybe before that, we are going to see prices come down some. It's not going to be, you know, sub 2% CPI, consumer price index, not going to be less than 2%, but, you know, we should kind of get through the end of the year and look at more normal, maybe 2.5%, 3%. I think that the labor market continues to heal. We still have a lot more people who could come back into the labor force, which would be a very good thing for the economy. I also think that when we think about where we are right now, it is important to say that, yes, of course, these variants are cropping up, but each time we go through this, we are a bit more resilient. You know, we have a survey out from Fidelity Investments that's found that 84% of the folks who responded to this said that they've learned to stop worrying about what they can't control. Now, by the way, that would be great if we could do that in our real lives, like with our relationships.
I give that advice to my daughter, who's in her early 20s, all the time. I'd rarely follow it myself, but it's encouraging to hear that people are doing that, because really, what can you actually control? Stop worrying about everything.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I think about that with finances, I hear from people all the time across the country, and they ask me these questions, and they're worried about inflation or this and the thing. Let's concentrate on what you actually can control.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to have a job, you can save money. You can put money in your emergency reserve fund. You want to have 6 to 12 months of your living expenses set aside. You can pay down high interest debt, like a credit card bill that's due. Or maybe you have some high interest student loan debt that's going to start clicking away this year. So, yeah, pay that debt down. And, of course, the third part, I call these the big three, in addition to emergency reserves and credit card pay down and high interest pay down, is to fund your own retirement, is to the best of your ability. You may not be able to put $20,500 into a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b or a traditional one. But that said, you can do what you can do, hopefully up to if your employer has a match to that point. If you're just using an IRA or a Roth IRA, putting in a few thousand dollars, if that's all you can afford, is better than doing nothing.
CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Seattle's new mayor, Bruce Harrell, officially took office early Saturday as the new year began. Now, in the days and months ahead, he's going to get all kinds of specific policy advice from experts in the various fields. And a lot of people trying to influence his decision-making in things like public safety and transportation and everything in between. But there's really only a handful of people who have been in the mayor's shoes. I reached out to a trio of recent Seattle City chief executives to get their advice for Mayor Harrell as he begins his first full week in office. Over the weekend, I had long conversations with Charlie Royer, Greg Nichols, and Mike McGinn. We're going to go in reverse chronological order here and start out with Mike McGinn. McGinn was Seattle mayor from 2010 to 2014, and he says no matter how busy Mayor Harrell feels he is in these first few weeks on the job, he must talk to the media.
When I first took office, I felt like, look, I got a big deficit. I had to cut 6% from the city budget. It was the recession. Unemployment was high. I had a lot of internal work to do. And I think the mistake I made was to the media was like, can you guys lay off a little while? I got a lot of work to do here. I don't have time to just meet with you all the time. Right. And I think that, the media doesn't like it when you do that. They get mad and they start reacting a certain way. So, do more of that, Mayor Harrell. You do have to keep meeting with them, but I do hope the media recognize a little bit how much pressure is on a new mayor, and also that it takes time to build momentum.
And McGinn says about that momentum, it's really critical to build it, and which, given the circumstances, this might be tricky.
I think it's going to be particularly difficult for Mayor Harrell. He's got a lot of interim directors. I honestly don't think that the prior mayor left him with a lot of momentum on a bunch of different issues. She had, was moving on. And the mayor and the mayor before Mayor Durkin also, was distracted by the end of his term. So I think there's a lot of work to do to kind of rebuild the muscles and sinews and strength within city government. And I don't want to be negative. There are people down there in the engine room of city government who've been keeping this thing working through mayor after mayor, and they're doing their best. But when you can get a mayor providing some focus and clarity to everybody else, they can do a lot more. So I think he's got a big job ahead of him to just get city government kind of working as effectively as the public wants it to work. It'll never be effective enough, but more effective than it's been.
And now Greg Nichols was mayor of Seattle from 2002 to 2010. He says Mayor Harrell has to have a thick skin and he must step carefully online.
Never, ever read the comments in an anonymous comment section. Just don't do it. It is not of any value to you and can only upset your family. So you need to have a thick skin. You have to be able to take those barbs, and they're going to come. They should come. Our elected officials should be open to criticism. Just when they get to be anonymous and obnoxious, ignore those, but try and take the others to heart. But do it in a way where you don't respond angrily or with a short fuse.
Now, Mayor Nichols also famously tangled with a snowstorm, or actually a series of snowstorms that hit the city in December 2008, and that some say actually cost him a third term. He learned a few things from that experience that might be helpful to Mayor Harrell.
I like snow much better now that I'm not mayor. I can enjoy it again. I can tell you that every mayor in the country, when snow gets in the forecast, has cold shivers go up and down their spine. And that was true for me. That was a storm that it was three storms in a row that we just were not able to deal with. We had people who worked really hard to try and keep up, but our systems were overwhelmed.
Did you ever regret that B-plus comment about the snowstorm?
I hate to say this because I did not complain about the press. I was saying that the workers deserved a B-plus for effort.
Yeah.
Not that we deserved a B-plus for our result, because it was not good. But the people were working 24/7 to try and keep up with the storms. And that's how I meant it. It was taken out of context, which happens. And, c'est la vie. I've never given myself a letter grade since.
Now, Charlie Royer is Seattle's only three-term mayor. He was in office from 1978 to 1990. He says that good working relationships with the city council and the media are key.
Don't criticize the council, even in private, with your department heads, and don't engage in bad-mouthing the council with citizens or with others who have some case against the council or something, a gripe or something, because they know it when you're doing that. It's almost like an animal kind of sense that they sense that you have been talking about them, or they hear about it, and that will negate any entreaties you make with the council or any approach you make to the council to try to work with them. And so don't engage in that, and certainly don't engage in beating up the press for something that. And don't be quoted in the papers or on TV that you know the media don't understand, or that they're out to get me or whatever.
You know, above all three of these guys see being mayor of Seattle as the coolest job in the world, and it should be something to be really enjoyed, not in a glib or oblivious way, but in a way that inspires Seattleites and city employees. Charlie Royer says he gave two other mayors who succeeded him some feedback on this front. One was the late Paul Schell, and then also Ed Murray.
Paul and Ed, I told them both this. When they came to City Hall in the morning, they looked like they were going in for a root canal or something. And they didn't seem to realize they had the best job in America,
yeah,
which is the mayor's job, that they were the closest thing to the people in government that people would ever experience, and that people wanted to like their mayor, and they wanted to see the mayor having some fun with a job in a fun city, the likes of which you couldn't find them in many other cities.
I want to thank Mike McGinn, Greg Nichols, and Charlie Royer for returning my calls. They certainly don't have to, and they're all good sports who have the best interests of the city as a whole at heart. And I think, like everybody, they're pulling for the new mayor, Bruce Harrell, to succeed, as I think we all are, I might add.
It's now time for your Daily Dose of Kindness, brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. Ooh, this one's been making national, possibly world news at this point. Just love this story. Brian Red Hamilton, the Vancouver Canucks assistant equipment manager, says he owes his life to the kindness of a stranger. During the Seattle Kraken's first home game, he noticed a fan banging on the glass, trying to get his attention. That's common. Usually Hamilton ignores this, but the woman, Nadia Popovici, was persistent, and as Hamilton was shuffling supplies and leaving the bench, he saw her phone up against the glass, and it had a message written in large, colorful font. It said, "The mole on the back of your neck is possibly cancerous. Please go see a doctor." What a message to get from a stranger. But it turns out she was right.
When the doc called me and he said, "We got the biopsy, and I'm going to diagnose you with cancer, and I'm going to cure you with cancer," in the same phone call from that mole, it's a pretty surreal phone call, and then that's when I went full head with talking to our media group about trying to find this person to A, say thank you, but also make sure that she knows that she's a hero.
And they did it. The two met this weekend.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, it's so nice to meet you. Are you okay with shaking hands?
Yes.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Reaching out.
Masks on, they gave each other a big hug. The 22-year-old fan of the hockey team graduated from the University of Washington, and she's going to attend medical school this
week. Some people were asking me, like, how does it feel? And I was like, what an amazing way to start, you know, my journey to med school. It's pretty priceless. I'm so happy for you.
And she's going to start her semester with a big boost. The Canucks and Kraken got together, gave her $10,000 to say thank you.
It's Seattle's Morning News. Felix Bonnell sitting in for Dave Ross, but there's nobody sitting in for G. Scott. Right, G?
Good morning, brother.
Good morning. Who could sit in for you? Nobody could ever sit in for you. So I'm glad you're here, because it'd be sad to just have silence on the radio for the next 3 or 4 minutes while I shuffled my papers around.
Felix, are you trying to say I talk too much?
No, no, no. It's a radio. You're supposed to talk too much.
Okay,
cool. No such thing.
All right, I just want to make sure. Good to go. Were we talking about them amazing, outstanding Seahawks?
It was great. It was so heartbreaking. It was sort of exciting and heartbreaking at the same time.
Why? Tell me why it was heartbreaking to you, Felix.
Well, I mean, think back, like, what, 6, 7, 8 years ago in the midst of that crazy dynasty, those two Super Bowls back-to-back, when they would routinely win these crazy games. They'd be down in the third quarter sometimes and then come back and win it in a big, you know, amazing finish.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that too much lately, especially this season. I went to 2 games in person this year. It's the most I've been to in a long time.
Yeah.
And it was sort of seeing the spark of the old team yesterday. It was very exciting.
It was very exciting. The Seahawks put up 51 points out there. That's their highest point total since 2012, to kind of put it into perspective. They looked fantastic yesterday. I said in the pregame show yesterday at the end zone in Touchdown City, I let all the fans know before the game, I said, expect to see style points. Expect to see a team go out there and play really hard, play really well, and give us a reminder of how things used to be. And why did I feel that way? I felt that way because it's just all of the talk that has happened over the last few weeks. All of the who's going to be here. Is this person going to get traded? Is this person going to be fired? All of this talk. And the truth of the matter is this. This season has been a disappointing season for everyone. That includes the players, the coaches, and we fans, no doubt about it, because our expectation has been set at a higher standard. The last 10 years have been glorious. It's been fantastic. It's not many fans across the United States of America that has been able to enjoy what the Seahawks fans have been able to enjoy. Now, with that being said, what does this mean going forward? The Seahawks now are 6-11. And wait, are they 6-11?
6-10, yeah. I think.
6-10.
Yeah,
6-10. I'm sorry about that. They're 6-10. And so they have one more game against the Arizona Cardinals. And that'll happen next week. They go down to Arizona. And there's a lot of people who's like, oh, okay, so what's going to be the speculation? Is Russell still going to be here? Was that Russell and Pete's last game in Lumen Field? Is Pete going to be here? Is John going to be here? I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know this. I know that in marriages and in relationships, we have all and understand that there have been problems in the past. Now, there are choices that can be made, Brother Felix, and the one choice is this. You can get the divorce, or you can go to counseling.
So who's going to counseling? Pete and Russ, or the city and Pete and Russ? I mean, who's actually going to be sitting in the room with the therapist?
I'm glad you brought that up. All of us. We all need to go. We all need to go because it was rough. And we all need to go and get on the couch, lay on the couch. By the way, if you guys know that our boss, I go and lay on his couch when I have our one-on-one meetings. But we all need to go and get on the couch. And then the therapist says, so tell us how that makes you feel. Well, let me tell you. You know, it's been a rough season, right? So and we go through this, we tweak some little things, we have some counseling, we talk about how to better speak to each other and understand each other, and then we go into the offseason and we come back next season, we do this again. I don't want Russell to leave. Russell has a no trade clause in his contract. Hey Russell, don't waive it. Stay here. Okay, Pete, you're the reason for the culture. And then John Schneider, of course, he's here till 2027 anyway, so he was never going anywhere. He has a big contract. So that's what it is. You don't need to make any move. There will be a lot of relationships and couples today. If all they did was just, you know what, just go sleep on the couch for a couple of days, go see a little bit of therapy, and you're good.
Well, a couple things. I mean, well, I've said this before, I think, on the air about Pete. When his system is working, you know, all his stuff, I let the guys do yoga, let them pick their playlists on the thing. You know, it's all the stuff that sort of seemed unconventional and very kind of individually, like, let's have the individual be the best they can be, then it'll make for the greatest team. That stuff all seems brilliant when they're winning. Mm. When they're not winning, it seems nutty. Like, what are you doing? Why are you letting those guys do those crazy things? Which is kind of how I've felt most of this season. But it also seems like A sign of maturity in a big city like Seattle is knowing that your teams are going to have some good times and bad times. And we've had that with the Mariners, certainly. We've been struggling for decades with the Mariners.
I mean,
you said, the Seahawks had this wonderful run going back to that Super Bowl they won and the one that they came so close to winning. And I miss a lot of the characters from that golden era where there was, because they were winning, there was a lot of time to get to know the personalities and things. Mm-hmm. I feel like because of the pressure to win and everything in this current season, I haven't gotten to know people like Rashad Penny as well as I'd like to know somebody in terms of their off the field personality. Is that wrong?
I mean, no, that's not wrong at all. Because sometimes it takes a while to fall in love, let's just call it the Seahawks show. And so before, you know, they got to go on and you're like, wait a minute, I kind of like these characters. Like right now, this is an opportunity for me to bring up the fact of what I've been doing over the last week. I binge watched every single episode of Yellowstone. Now, here's the deal. People have been telling me, you know, I heard a little glimpse and they're like, oh, this Yellowstone is a pretty good show. And I've been hearing about that. But finally, I fell in love with it. So what I'm saying is we're in season 4 of Yellowstone. It took really 4 seasons for me to really just jump on board this Yellowstone bandwagon. So when it comes to the Seahawks, yes, I understand you guys are missing the past, but hey, give this current folks, give them some time. There's a lot of people and a lot of favorites that you can fall in love with on this team. Keep the team together. Keep the team together. That's my battle.
Oh, I thought you were chanting there. All right, G. Scott, you're back at 9 o'clock for the Gene Ursula Show.
Yes,
Happy New Year, buddy.
See you, buddy. Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.